I'm going to talk about the marathon today, and also I want to say that I have no financial relationships to disclose either. I'm going to give you a brief overview of the day of the marathon and some of the activities afterwards. There are a number of presentations at the sessions over the APHA meeting today, and I highly recommend hearing some of them, especially about the activities that happened through the Boston Public Health Commission, as well as the mental health activities that went on. You'll get much more detailed descriptions of those. To talk a little about the marathon, this is the marathon route. It is a 26.2-mile route that runs straight from the town of Hopkinton, a small community in eastern Massachusetts, through eight communities into the city of Boston. It is unusual in terms of marathons because it doesn't have a circular route, so there are 26.2 miles of territory where you have thousands of runners, hundreds of thousands of spectators all along the route. So it presents a number of health and medical challenges as well as security challenges. To talk a little about Massachusetts, just to give you an idea, we're a home rule state. We have 351 local health departments, each responsible for the health in their community. We have one state health department, so it's a decentralized system. We have 74 acute care hospitals spread across the state. We have hundreds of long-term care facilities and community health centers that are also sprinkled around the state. And there are 12 to 13 hospitals in the city of Boston, and then there are several hospitals on the route. Each year, and this was the 117th running of the marathon, each year we treat it as a planned mass casualty event. And we build on the work that has gone before. In this year, the 117th running, there were approximately 27,000 runners, and those are both registered runners who we have information on and bandits who show up because they want to run at the race. And there are easily 500,000 plus spectators across the route and in the city of Boston. In terms of health and medical planning, one of the assumptions every year is that at least 1,000 runners or spectators will need some sort of medical care along the route, because when you have that many people either running or watching them, you're going to see a lot of injuries. To be able to take care of that, what we have done over the past number of years is working with the Boston Athletic Association, which is the agency that sponsors the marathon, have developed a series of medical supports all along the route. So there are 26 medical tents, one per mile, starting at the town of Hopkinton and running through the course of the race. Some of those are enhanced with ambulance support. Many of them have fairly basic health care but can provide assistance or hydration or some medical support for runners. There are first aid and hydration stations that are developed and run by the American Red Cross. We have mass casualty incident trailers that we park along the route in case there is something that happens, so there are extra equipment and extra supplies there. And then there is a very well-organized system of medical sweep buses, which are all connected by radio to the central command post and can pick up runners along the route if they can't finish or can go to individual health and medical tents and pick folks up. So on the day of the marathon, after about 3 or 4 months of planning and development of an operations manual and a medical manual, both the state and the city activate for the marathon. In terms of ESF-8 coordination, the Emergency Preparedness Bureau and our Office of Emergency Medical Services, which regulates ambulance services, provide staff at both the State Emergency Operations Center, which is in Framingham, and our Department Operations Center, which is in the city of Boston. And we are there primarily to monitor the health and medical needs going on during the race. So at the very beginning of the race, we will do a baseline bed count for all of the hospitals along the route. We will have conference calls with hospitals to give them situational awareness, and we set up a schedule at the beginning of the day that runs through the time. We also monitor situational awareness. Boston has a medical intelligence center, which they stand up. That's their ESF-8 coordination center. And then we all have staff along the route that are providing information and updates. These pictures are from the day of the marathon at about 2:50. I think the one on the left, you'll see the race has been going on for 4 hours and 9 minutes. I couldn't run for 4 hours and 9 minutes, but these people have been. If you look at the picture on the right, that is immediately after the explosion, and you'll see that in less than a minute, there were EMTs and gurneys heading toward the area where individuals were injured. It was a remarkably quick response for a number of reasons, and I'll talk about that in a little while. So on April 15th, this is a picture of a little later in the day, ambulances still on Boylston Street picking up individuals and ready to transport them to hospitals. But during the initial minutes after the explosions, Boston EMS, the emergency medical services that is run through the Boston Public Health Commission, and our central medical emergency dispatch were able to take 30 red-tagged patients off of the streets and get them to hospitals within 18 minutes. They coordinated that on scene and through the central dispatch. The remaining patients who were injured at the scene were off the scene by 45 minutes after the explosions. One of the things that was key to the response is that patients were distributed evenly across the hospitals, and that requires Boston EMS and CMED looking at the acuity of the patients and being in touch with the hospitals and getting people distributed evenly so that no single hospital was overwhelmed. Mass General, which is one of the large hospitals that's nearby, received its first patient within 14 minutes after the explosion, and within an hour or so they had received 19 patients, 12 of whom were admitted and a number of whom went immediately into surgery. All of the hospitals were able to handle all of the patients they got, and what we have heard since then is most of them would have been able to take more had they needed to. One of the reasons it worked that well, this is a map of the finish line and the trauma centers. There are 6 level 1 trauma centers that were within 2 miles of the finish line. That's one of the reasons when things went as well as they did. They were all busy, even though it's a holiday in Boston, it's Patriots Day. They all had busy emergency departments, they had busy operating rooms. And they were able within the first 30 minutes or so to clear out their operating rooms, to clear out their emergency departments, and be ready to expect individuals coming in. And that was primarily because they've exercised these plans before. They have surge plans in place, and they have very well-trained staff, emergency and trauma staff. They also benefited from the planning that has gone on across all of the hospitals and with the city of Boston and with the state. I think one of the key things we heard, and this is one of the things we try to keep in mind, the incident commander at Brigham and Women's Hospital said he was there, he felt like he needed to do something, but then he realized mostly he needed to stand back and let people do their jobs. And they did what they were trained to do, and they did it very well. One of the key things that has happened since the marathon that happened in the first couple of days was recognition of the need for a robust mental health response. Within a couple of days after the explosions, we had a federal mental health team that came into the state that provided support primarily around first responders, the athletic association, and hospital staff who had been there to provide them with some support. And they stayed for about 10 days, during which time we developed more fully the state system through our State Department of Mental Health and the assets that the city of Boston has. There's a list of service providers there. We got assistance from a number of agencies that are local as well as national. We also had good support from the Israeli Trauma Coalition, which came into the state about a month after the explosions and did a series of trainings around self-care in that sort of situation and around how you plan to take care of your staff while they're dealing with that. And they did a very effective job for us. We worked primarily with the Boston Athletic Association and their volunteers. They have hundreds of medical volunteers at the finish line who were directly affected by the explosions and the patient transport after that. They have thousands of volunteers across the route who were deeply troubled by these events and who are trying to get ready to do this again in April. We had school safety. We had residents throughout the city of Boston. We have also seen since the marathon that there is planning that needs to happen for the subsequent events. So the half marathon we had about a week ago, there was significant mental health support there. And there is always mental health support as the BAA is planning anything. So they've given us some very good lessons to look at as we plan for the next year's marathon. The unanticipated event that happened for us with the marathon was the lockdown, something that I have never been through before and not something that was part of the planning for the marathon. But on Friday morning after the marathon, there was a shelter-in-place strong recommendation made by public safety in the city of Boston and five surrounding towns. And what that means was that everything closed down. Mass transit closed down, businesses closed down, schools were shut. Nothing was really moving on the city of Boston. The armored vehicle there was actually in the city of Watertown, where they found the suspects. What we hadn't anticipated was that complete transit shutdown and the impact that it had on access to healthcare services, access to hospitals, and access to home health and prescription medication. So that is also part of what we're looking at as we plan for this year. There are a number of lessons that we've learned. One, the benefit of preparedness activities. Again, we do this every year, and we build on the lessons from the previous year. We have a remarkably well-equipped and trained responders in the city of Boston and surrounding areas. We have well-developed hospital disaster plans that they exercise regularly within their facilities and across facilities. And then we have multiple cross-disciplinary exercises between healthcare and public safety. But we also don't want to miss acknowledging that we had a tremendous amount of luck in terms of this event. One, six level one trauma centers within 2 miles of the event is virtually unprecedented. It happened at the change of a shift, so there were two shifts of medical personnel within the hospitals at the time they started getting patients. There are tremendous medical resources pre-positioned at the finish line and medical personnel and bystanders on scene who were able to help. There was also the fact that area roads are closed off all around the route, so there's no transportation problem in getting people from the scene to the hospitals. There's also the cross-jurisdictional and the fact that we had multiple EOCs open and staffed, so we didn't have to bring staff in. That also helped us coordinate the information and coordinate messaging that needed to happen. In terms of current activities, we're currently doing a joint after-action report with public safety and other partners that will go across the state and all of the communities that were involved. We're looking at some of the requirements about hospital release of information and how better to respond to a lockdown situation. And then we're building mental health services and beginning to plan for next year's marathon. On Friday of this week, we'll start doing mass casualty incident planning with the communities along the route outside of Boston so that we can be prepared next April to build on what we learned this year.
Thank you very much. We do have time for one or two questions, if there are some questions. Any questions? Right here, please. Just speak up loudly. Just for the tape of the session, the question has to do with was the lockdown local police or military, and how would you deal with the situations differently?
So the lockdown was primarily local and state police in the city of Boston starting it, and then state police also supporting that through our Executive Office of Public Safety and Security. And we connected with them through the Unified Command Center and through the work that we were doing in terms of providing them with information about how we needed to change the lockdown so that hospitals could continue to accept patients and ambulances could continue to move. One of the things we're doing this year is working more closely with them to give them a better understanding of the health and medical system and what needs to keep moving so that that system can continue to work. And they've been very receptive to our suggestions. So I think we'll build that into the plan for next year.
We have time for one more question. Are there any other questions? Yes, right here, please. The speaker.
Who paid for the medical costs of going back to
the Repeat the question.
So the question is, who paid for the medical cost? Many of the people had individual health insurance, which would cover. There is also financial assistance, which is available through the Massachusetts Office of Victim Assistance and the FBI Office of Victim Assistance. So there was a family assistance center that was put together to help people connect with those benefits. Then there was also a fund that was set up, and money from the fund went to help support some of the ongoing health care needs of individuals who were injured.
Thank you.